Today on Wings, we turn to a sister program that broadcasts nationally in Australia to share news about a country that North Americans don't hear much about, but is an important bellwether for the changes in Eastern European politics.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Slovenia, does that name ring a bell? It was the first region to secede from the Yugoslavian Federation. It's now a parliamentary democracy and a member of the European Union. Most of it is in high mountains. It borders on Austria, Italy, Croatia, and perhaps, unfortunately, Hungary, whose rightward turn is influencing Slovenia today. For more on that, here's the June 30th episode of Accent of Women.
Hello and welcome to Accent of Women, a show by and about women from diverse cultures and languages right across the world. I'm Giselle Hanna. Over the last 10 weeks, protesters right across Slovenia have flocked to the streets of their cities to protest against the newly installed right-wing government there, in addition to the generalised economic pressures brought about in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. Slovenia is not a country commonly featuring in the international press, so you probably didn't notice the mass movement of tens of thousands of people protesting out of a total population of 2 million. So on Accent of Women today, we're going to look at what's happening in Slovenia. My guest is Nika Kovac, who is the director of the 8 March Institute. And that's a political research institute focusing on social divisions and using political economy and feminist theory. As well as political research, the institute is involved in direct and collective action. Here is Nika Kovac.
In Slovenia, there are interesting times because I think that two things come together. So, from one point of view, there is the COVID-19 crisis, which is difficult, I think, in every single country. And on the other hand, one day after the lockdown came into Slovenia, we got a new government. This is the right-wing government. Actually, our prime minister is prime minister for third time, and he's known like for many corruptions. He's known for using hate speech. He's known for spreading of hate for many years in Slovenia. And when they came into the power, everything changed. With the previous government, on the press conferences about the COVID-19, actually the doctors were speaking, the experts were speaking, the Institute for Public Health was involved, but they cut them down immediately and the politicians started to speak with us. And also in Slovenia, in the first week of crisis, what was really good to see is that people start organizing themselves because they saw that they will lost everything. Precarious workers, people who are self-employed, started to build communities on Facebook, and they start talking about they don't have money, they don't have jobs anymore. But the government in the first week just raised the wages of the ministers and basically of themselves. So I think that this was the first point where people were getting angry, and the protests basically began with the protests from the windows. So people wrote signs and took photos of them from like their balconies and their windows, because protests were always made in a way which was allowed and which was actually good for taking care of people during this sickness. So then in Slovenia, we didn't have like a lot of people who got COVID-19. So at one point, people went on their bikes and we started bicycling, not just in Ljubljana, across whole Slovenia. Many cities are involved in those protests. So this was basically the beginning.
How big have the protests been? Because it's difficult to get a sense from watching internationally if the protests are big by Slovenian standards or average. So what is your assessment?
Three interesting things happen. Firstly, we have protests in many different cities. So they are not centered just in Ljubljana, but people protest all across Slovenia. And this is something new, that not just the capital is involved in that kind of movement, but also really, really small villages and cities. The second thing is that the protests are permanent. They're happening every single Friday. And more people are coming to the protests. The official numbers are that on every single protest, there is more than 10,000 people. So in Slovenia, we have 2 million inhabitants, and this is quite a lot because also some of the people didn't come because they were afraid of coming outside because of the virus. And the third thing is that the protests are self-organized. There are many different groups, there are many different interests, but there is like a common sense of solidarity and a common sense that we don't want to have those elites taking our money, taking our power.
I just want to talk about COVID-19 for a moment, because you mentioned that it's not that widespread in Slovenia, and you also talked a little bit about some lockdown measures. So how widespread is it, and how is the government responding to the health pandemic?
Yeah, so basically we had two different governments that were dealing with the COVID-19. The first government had press conferences with experts, and we got a really good feeling like what is happening behind the virus, what kind of numbers are behind everything and what is going on. But then the new government came and it failed completely when it like came to dealing with COVID-19. The first problem is that we didn't have exact informations. So politicians were like doing more of the political propaganda than speaking about the reality. The second thing is that Slovenia failed really heavily when it came to elderly homes. Most of the like deaths and most of the disease was structured in those homes. There is also like a huge scandal that government forced people to write like lists of people who won't be treated if they got like COVID-19 because they are old and they have other diseases. Government failed when it came to social security in Slovenia. At the beginning, they didn't want to help self-employed. They didn't want to help precarious workers. But then the protests have been going on and the people organized themselves and we forced them that they helped also at the end precarious workers and self-employed. But they left out students, they left out students' families, they left out people who are working with the contract. And the unemployment in Slovenia is getting higher and higher. So what I'm saying usually when I'm trying to analyze this period is that the social differences are now seen and they are deeper and deeper. So this is also what is happening. And The fourth thing is that a really huge scandal came out about corruption. There was like millions of euros was thrown into the bins because government was buying the masks and everything from the wrong people who are family connected with them and things like this. So at one point, they are getting richer and richer, and people are suffering and suffering more and more.
The same day this interview took place, Slovenia's interior minister resigned, saying he was protesting a police investigation of the medical equipment scandal. The police chief who ordered the house-to-house search then also resigned. Protesters called for the whole government to resign. The previous prime minister had resigned in March after failing to pass pension reform. The left party quit his coalition and he lost his majority. When he resigned, he hoped to trigger a new election, but the major right-wing party was able to put together a coalition to get a majority and take back control. The head of that party, now prime minister, is an ally of Viktor Orban, prime minister of Hungary, who is sometimes described as a populist soft fascist. You're listening to Wings. We return you now to Gisele Hanna's interview with Nina Kovac, as aired in the series Accent of Women.
Now, you also mentioned the new right-wing government. So a lot of the media is talking about this government being installed in Slovenia, and I wanted to ask, what does that mean? Was there a democratic vote, like a normal election? How did this come about?
In Slovenia, we had elections, I think, 3 years ago, and the new government that we got was centrist. It was still neoliberal government, but there were social democrats in it, centrist party, and other parties. And then when the prime minister resigned, the new one had an option to form a government, and the parties that went into the government had promised to the voters at the election that they won't go to the right-wing government. So people are saying, this is not right. We didn't vote for you. We believe that you will do something else. So this is the story behind it.
I see. I'm interested, while we are speaking about this right-wing government that kind of came in by fiat or pseudo-democratic means, you know, there was an election, there was a prime minister who resigned, and then through the existing mechanisms, this new right-wing government is there. But is the legacy of Nazism, is that being reignited in Slovenia? Did it ever go away? What is the situation with fascist forces, which we are seeing emerge everywhere?
Mm-hmm. I strongly believe in the difference between the government and the like the official words and the feelings of the people, because in Slovenia we have a really strong anti-fascist tradition, and I think that there is, like, between the people there is a lot of common sense about solidarity, about helping each other, and some values such as like social state. So we have public schools, we have public health system. So I think that this is much, much stronger. But on the other hand, the problem is that right-wing groups and Nazis and people who are close to that kind of ideology are coming to the to our parliament. They are having like place in the media. People can hear their voice, and in the moment of fear, in the moment of uncertainty, they are more, like, they're louder and louder. And right now, I think that people are not afraid anymore to show that they agree with them. And this is the problem. We just had like a scandal at the last protest. A group of Nazis came to it, and one of them was showing their gestures. So he was doing those things, and one teacher he showed him his ass. Actually, he took his pants down and he wanted to symbolically show them that they're not important for the protests. But right now what is happening is that the media is attacking this teacher. He resigned from his work. He's getting death threats. But no one is speaking about that guy who is actually like a supporter of the Nazi ideology.
Well, now, well, looking directly then at the protests on the streets, it sounds like the COVID pandemic coupled with, well, the economic crisis has caused people to reach boiling point. What are the main demands of the protests? What do people want to see changed? Even if, for instance, they succeed in falling the government, what are the protesters wanting any new government to do?
Yeah, I think that people are just fed up with the relations of power. So I think this is like something that we all have in common, that people are aware that it is not right that they cannot pay for their rent and they cannot pay their bills, but there are people who are in positions of power for decades and they have everything. So I think this is the main message. And another message that can be heard on the protests is message for freedom, for freedom of speech and against repression. What is going on is also that the behavior of the police changed. They're getting more violent. They are putting fence on the, our main square. So even in time when there was like a rule of social distancing, they cut our main square into two halves because they were protecting the building of the parliament. So basically they start like behaving like they're in charge of taking care of the government, of the politicians, not people. They're also punishing people at the protests. So people who were like writing signs on the floor and people who were like just putting paper notes on the floor are getting punishments. And this is something that never happened before, to be punished for expressing your opinion. And this is like one of the messages of the protests. We don't want to live in that kind of country. But my personal opinion is that in Slovenia, we have a long history of neoliberal governments, you know, of governments that like, even if they were liberal, even if they were taking care of human rights and everything, they didn't work with questions like poverty. They didn't work like with class questions.
And on community radio stations right across Australia, you're listening to Accent of Women. I'm speaking with Nika Kovac, the director of the 8 March Institute, a political left-wing think tank in Slovenia that's also involved in social movements. We're talking about the 10-week-strong weekly anti-government protest movement emerging in Slovenia. Let's try and give our listeners a sense of Slovenia demographically, economically, politically, because we don't hear much about Slovenia in the international press. So why don't we start by looking at the country's economic and political situation? I know we've spoken a little bit about that, but you talked a bit about class relations and class divisions and poverty and unemployment. So maybe let's start there.
Okay, so actually, Slovenia is a really young country. It's like, it's not even 30 years old now. So we were part of Yugoslavia and we have like a strong socialist tradition in terms of like having really strong social state. So we have schools for free, we have public health system, and those systems work quite well in Slovenia. So this is something that we are really proud of. And we also have quite high level of equality between men and women, for example. We don't have a big gender pay gap. We have right to abortion written in our constitution. So abortion is free and it's legal in Slovenia. But on the other hand, what is happening is that during the decades of our like statehood, the privatization is starting to happening. The differences between people are getting bigger and bigger. In Slovenia, like the poorest part of the inhabitants are like the single elderly women who are living alone out of the capital. They have like pension around 250 euros. So they're mostly hungry, they don't have sometimes even water. And we don't speak a lot about that kind of stuff because we are still really convinced that we are like good state where people are living quite okay. So the problem also is that we don't have like a lot of regular jobs for young people. So the level of precariousness is really, really high. And we have also a problem with housing. So the rents are higher and higher in Slovenia. I think that this is something that we are facing all across the world right now. But in Slovenia, these are like one of the permanent questions.
What's the situation for trade unions? Are trade unions free? Are people able to freely organise in them, especially in privatised companies and even in the public service? So that would be workers organising effectively against the state employer. What's the situation there?
No, we have like a long tradition of unions, and we have a tradition of people joining them. So they are a part like of our everyday life. So we don't have problem with this. We have some problems with companies that are coming from outside, for example, as Lidl and Hofer and like, you know, chains of the supermarkets. And because there are like, we had just one scandal that they fired a trade unionist from one of those companies, but people are in Slovenia are getting angry because of that kind of stuff. So I think that the level of trust in trade unions is really high and we see them as something important.
And what about press freedom? This issue of a free press is very topical right across the world, and with Facebook and Twitter platforms dealing with, good or badly, trying to deal with this issue of fake news. What is the situation for press freedom and well-funded government press?
We have a national television, which actually released the scandal about the corruption. So during the COVID-19 crisis, actually the trust of people into the national television is getting higher and higher. But on the other hand, the party which is in power now is having their own television, which was founded with the money from Hungary. They have really like tight relations with Orban. And our prime minister is having his interview every single week on that television. And he's actually starting to speak about this television as something relevant and as something public and relevant. But what they're mostly doing is they're using hate speech, they're attacking people, and they're like just presenting their side of the story and lying around many different things. So this is a huge problem.
Well, there is just so much going on in the world. Firstly, thank you so much for talking extensively about the situation in Slovenia. Like other countries in the world, the people of Slovenia are out on the streets, as we said before, reaching boiling point. There are real class characteristics to all of the demonstrations everywhere that we're seeing them. Do you think there is an international unifying factor in these protests? Do you think we will ever find a way to connect them and unify them?
I believe so. I believe that there is like that we live in a really special moment in which we have a chance to build something different. I think that we can fail completely, or we can do something like really, really amazing right now. In my opinion, I think that what is common is that there is a wish for a more democratic, more equal world. And for the first time, we know that we cannot achieve this just through like liberal reforms. We cannot achieve this just with speaking about our rights, but we need like serious differences on the economic level. What is also new is that there is a lot of young people. I think that everything started with the environment movement, and they're still on the streets. They're speaking, they're expressing their wish, and they're not quiet. So I think that together we can move something.
That was Nika Kovac, the director of the 8 March Institute, a political left-wing think tank in Slovenia that's also involved in direct action and social movements. We were talking about the anti-government protest movement emerging there. And that brings us to the end of today's program of Accent of Women. This week's program was produced in my study at home with the incredible support of 3CR staff. Thank you to them for ensuring that this program is still able to be heard right across the country. Accent of Women receives financial assistance from the Community Broadcasting Foundation. The show is distributed nationally via the Community Radio Network, with special thanks to the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia. You can write to us at accentofwomen@gmail.com. If you want to hear previous programs, you can download the podcast from 3cr.org.au. Go to the Accent of Women page and follow the links to this week's show. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Giselle Hanna.
Wings thanks Giselle Hanna for her wide-ranging interviews with women across the world and her consistent focus on human rights and labor issues. To hear Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org, and please check our daily news feed at facebook.com/wingsradio. Wings supporters include your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. I'm Wings series producer Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.